art and culture. We are gathered here to listen to presentations on the strategic objectives of the Department of Arts and Culture. You will remember that in our first portfolio committee meeting, they pointed out that because of constraints on time, they had not completed their work on their strategic objectives, and that they would, as soon as possible, come back and make that presentation. That is to say, we will not only expect the plan, but also some flesh on the bone. Before we move to that, it does us a world of good to again refresh our knowledge of one another as to who we are. We will not do it all the time the same way, but this is only our second meeting, and some might not have been here in the previous meeting, so it's important that we know one another. I am Chenwani Farisan, all the way from the other end of the country, very close to the Limpopo River, in the Limpopo province. And if I cross that river to the north, I find myself in Zimbabwe. If I cross that river in the northeast, I find myself in Mozambique. If I cross that river in the northwest, I find myself in Botswana. And if I go south, I find myself in the other part of the former Transvaal, that's now called Gauteng. Geographically, that's where we are located. I come from Limpopo province, as I've said, where I have served as a member of the legislature and MEC for agriculture, land and environment, and MEC for transport, and speaker for the previous 5 years of that legislature. I've served in this parliament for the first 4 years as member of this parliament and served in several committees. And now I've been fully recycled, beginning here, 12 years in Limpopo, and back in Cape Town. If you ask me what is my most important task now, this time is to eat as much snook as I can. I'm getting old, and I don't know how many more years I'll be on this planet. So I'll make sure that I do justice to all the snook that I can put my fingers on. Thank you very much. Let us just introduce yourself. We'll begin with honorable members. Honorable members, please, let us move anti-clockwise. Use any language with which you are comfortable.
I'm Mutuku Malo. I'm from Gauteng, member of the ANC. Thank you.
Good morning, members. Representative of the Department of Arts and Culture. My name is Loketo.
Excuse me. I said let's start with honorable members. You are. Did you say you come from the department?
No, you didn't listen to me, what I was saying.
My apologies.
Okay. Thanks. I am from the Northwest Province. My constituency is in Swahili, that is called the Rayville. That's where I spend most of my time when I'm on research. Thank you.
Good morning, I'm Amelie Lortit, and I am the DA spokesperson on arts and culture, and I come from the Free State.
ngicela umjigama ngiphumelele ngicela buya eGauteng ngaphansi kwe Congress of the People.
Are we through with honorable members? Please let us come to the department, the officials.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Louise Graham. I'm the Head of International Relations in the Department of Arts and Culture.
Chair and honorable members, my name is Sigile Tiliga. I'm a Chief Director in the Sinkasa in the Department of Arts and Culture. Thank you.
My name is
I was born here and I grew up in Kukubetu. You've got to be careful about how you eat snook, otherwise you lose your teeth.
Thank you. Are we done with the staff? We have our guest. Please.
I'm Lola Lanjanda. I work as an executive secretary for the Professor of Science and Culture.
Honourable Chair, I'm Abdullah Driscoll from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
One is Gert from that group. The other one is member of staff in my office. Thank you very much. As for losing my teeth, it's too late. I don't have a single tooth left, so I can eat as much snook as I want. They do no harm to the gum. Thank you very much. Apologies. I have an apology on medical grounds, health grounds, from Honorable Chivasa. I have it with me here. Any other apology? Please.
Thank you, Chairperson. The apology comes from the Minister and the Deputy Minister. They're both in Cabinet today. And originally, the Deputy Minister was supposed to be here. But then all the deputy ministers were asked to attend the cabinet today. Secondly, Chairperson, I've got two other colleagues who are caught up in the traffic on N2, and they will be arriving a little bit late. But we can proceed there with joining.
Any more apologies? Please. Honorable Lodley.
Just to apologize on behalf of Mrs. Van der Walt. She's in our constituency.
Thank you. Will that conclude the list of apologies? Honorable members, some of you may be asking the question, why did we proceed with this meeting if we knew the minister and the deputy minister would not be here? Because from the word go, we made it very clear that we would prefer an arrangement where there's not only administrative accountability, but political accountability. We postponed two meetings at the request of the department. The last one being just before we went on recess, because the department was driving the Nelson Mandela Day program. And there was another postponement before that. That doesn't make me happy at all. We can't do our work by postponing meeting after meeting. And Comrade Wakashe, I hope you get me very clear on that one. We will not be open all the time to get meetings postponed. It fails this committee, and it fails the department. The department does not monitor. Department over which no oversight is done, that's the best recipe for failure. So please, let's work together in such a way that we do not use interdicts and summons for us to be able to meet and do our job. As for the minister, it was made clear to me that this Wednesday she would be in cabinet. And I said, yes, that we understand, but let the deputy minister come. Because at that stage, it was not known to us and to the deputy minister, including the minister, that the deputy ministers would be called upon to attend cabinet. That information we only got this morning. So, honorable members, it's not my plan and my intention to excuse the political leadership of the department from attending our meeting. This is just how it happened. And we must make sure that it doesn't happen again. The other thing that has driven us and forced us to have this meeting now is because as a committee we must work towards finalizing our five-year monitoring and oversight strategic plan. And we couldn't really proceed and finalize on that before the department makes the presentation until such time as we have interrogated that presentation so that we can proceed to make our own plan. In conclusion, I'm again calling on all stakeholders. There are two key such stakeholders here. It's the committee and the department. They must respect each other and work towards making our program a successful delivery program. There's lots of work that needs to be done. And then I want to add that the HOD and the Secretary Committee, you must work very, very hard as a team to resolve whatever administrative challenges that you face. It's not for politicians to resolve those challenges of what day we meet and what is possible, what's not possible. We believe that both of you have the capacity, the necessary qualifications, and the necessary experience to resolve those technical administrative things for us to be able to do our job. And you'll get our support to actually achieve that goal. So thank you very, very much. Work hard. Next time we arrange a meeting, let the political leadership be here. At least one of them, preferably both of them. Thank you very much. We invite the department. I understand that at that time when you presented, not everything was in place. You were still working on other things. This document that followed into our pigeonholes after that meeting, which was not available at this time. So if here and there you find yourself repeating, don't find yourself guilty. It's just that what you presented then is not completely devolved from the fully fledged package that you now have. Our intention is at the latest to close at 12:30, if possible earlier. So make your presentation and leave enough time for honorable members to interact with your presentation. Thank you very much. It's in your capable hands.
Thank you very much, Chair Peston and honorable members. We have distributed the medium-term strategic framework, which takes us from 1st of April 2009 to the 31st of March 2012.
HOD, please, you promised me that besides this one, there's another document that will accompany this one. You still have the position?
In terms of, I was just going to do the presentation now.
And then distribute that document?
Yes, we will then distribute that after the meeting.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure that the lost marks carefully.
Okay.
Thank you.
And so what we will do is to actually just focus on the programs of the department and really look at not a very much detailed presentation, but just look at strategic issues that we would like to pick up. And I have decided to start with the actual content of the work that we do and not go into the administration and so forth. Secondly, I'm not going to address myself to the issues of the mission, and the mission of the mission and the vision of the department, because that vision and mission we have already engaged with it. But just perhaps to refresh your memory, just only on the aim, which is to develop and preserve South African culture to ensure social cohesion and nation building. And so as we move over this presentation, I would like the honorable members to focus on the issues of social cohesion and nation building and assist us to find, to see if what we are putting on the table is actually helping us to achieve social cohesion and nation building. I would have hoped that at one stage, Honorable Chairperson, that we would come to to the portfolio committee to present to you the work that we have done on social cohesion, the program of action for the government, the strategic framework, and the campaigns, mobilization campaigns towards social cohesion. Perhaps I should also inform you now that at the end of October, the 29th and the 30th of October, and there will be a conference, a national conference, that will be held in Durban at the convention center. And the theme of the conference is Building a Caring Nation. And it is one of our attempts to deal with the challenges of social cohesion that we are facing. There will be formal letters of invitation coming to the honorable members and the chairperson. All I can say now is that the conference is, the patron of the conference is the President of the Republic, and the convener is the Minister of Arts and Culture. But Chairperson, we would welcome an opportunity to come and just do a presentation on the work that we have done in government in terms of social cohesion, as well as to brief you on the approach and on the conference, which is scheduled for the 29th and 30th of October this year. Moving away from that, let me get into the actual presentation and get started with the actual program that we have. The first content program that we have is a program that we call Program 2. Program 1 is administration. Program 2 is art and culture in society. And the purpose here is to develop and promote art and culture in South Africa and mainstream its role in social development. The challenge that we have as a department, and I'm sure it is equally the same with our colleagues in the provinces, is the general lack of understanding of the role of art and culture in social development. That at times, a former minister of deputy minister of arts and culture, and Ms. Bridget Mabandla, before she joined justice, that she used to say to us, "We have got to fight the perception that arts and culture is the banqueting arm of government. That we get called upon when people say, 'Can you provide some entertainment?' And we've got a function." And then they say, "But can you also ask the artist to pay for free?" Or they give them half prices. And that is, in a way, is indicative of at times the value and that people associate with art and culture. They think it's just sunk and done, but they do not actually understand that at the core of the soul of any nation is its cultural identity. And what this program then seeks to do is to address that. For the strategic framework, for the medium-term strategic framework, we're going to be concentrating on a number of things. One, we are now conducting can I please get some water? I'm sorry, Chairperson. I'm still recovering from flu.
We shall not panic and dissolve this meeting. We will proceed.
At least it's not swine flu. Everybody's okay. And one is to, we are now conducting a survey, and we are going to be looking at developing a national strategy on choirs in the country. We are doing this because we believe that there is not one community in South Africa that does not have a choir. And the choirs come in all shapes and forms. Junior choirs, adult choirs, teachers' choirs, nurses' choirs, and what we are looking at, what we are trying to address here, is we are trying to see whether we can use the choirs to be agents of social cohesion in our country. That can we mobilize the choirs of this country to help us build the nation, to help us address some of the social ills that we have. And if we then believe that there is no community in South Africa that does not have a choir, that means we can penetrate deeply into our community through choirs, the church choirs, community choirs, and so forth. The second matter that is quite strategic that we are looking at is to strengthen the activities in our community art centers. And although we are staying 15 days.
HLD, I'm depending on this screen. and is not moving with your presentation, who's in charge of this thing? Please make sure. We're still there.
Yes.
Okay.
And we said we were required in our community access. Although we are saying they we are piloting in 15, but what we are trying to do is to ensure that we would be able to spread out nationally on the community art centers. The community art centers have been a serious challenge to us, in the sense that when we had conceived the structure of delivering in terms of community art centers, we had put on the table a framework which said that the department, the national government, will build the infrastructure. The provincial government will maintain the infrastructure. Local government will ensure programming within the community aspect. And regrettably, we put in the infrastructure, but the other matters did not follow up. So, because community art centers were not fully programmed, therefore they were underutilized, and in some cases, when they were underutilized, they became victims of vandalism and so forth. What we are doing now, together with the provinces, we are working on a plan where we are saying we accept the fact that local government says that it does not have enough funds to put ensure programming in these centers. So we will take over the programming on these centers, and so that we can ensure that after school activities and so forth. And also another area that we're going to zoom in on is the question of art and culture management training to community art centers. We are really very much faced with the challenge that most of the people who are involved in the arts are artists, they are not managers. And I remember 95, if not 96, we requested Hugh Masekela to be the CEO of the State Theatre in Pretoria. And he agreed reluctantly. And after some time, I think it was 6 months, he says, no, you guys are setting me up for failure. I'm not a manager. You know, I'm a musician. I know how to play my trumpet, and I'll play my trumpet anywhere in the world. But don't ask me to come and talk depreciation of state assets, state theater assets, and all of that. He says, because that's not him. And you are correct. You know. And we agreed on that, and we tried to find, and we managed to find a CEO who was an administrator. Now, if you just look across the country, this challenge is a challenge that is not only community-based thing. There is hardly any training in art administration in the country. There are very, very few institutions that offer art administration. And it is actually critical in terms of the management of these institutions. And equally important is that also in not only in the performing arts sector, but also even within our museum sector, we are always faced with the challenge of having to recruit a caliber that can run this institution. And I think that this is the case, for example, also with Robin Island. This is trying to get the actual capacity to administer this institution. So it's one of the key areas that we're going to be looking at in terms of the MTE. We have said that we will look towards the implementation of programs emancipating marginalized women, that's the last bullet, children, and through exhibitions and works of art, and also working with the people with disabilities. Chairperson and honorable members, we have just finished an exercise on what we call the organizational development exercise. We did this because since our establishment as the Department of Arts and Culture, as a separate department from the then Arts, Culture, Science and Technology, we had not done an organizational development exercise which would outline the actual capacities that we need in order to deliver properly in the area of art and culture. I'm mentioning this because in the organizational development that we have finalized on, the issue of women and has been elevated to a chief directorate that will specifically deal with the areas of issues of women empowerment, equity, and so forth. And the minister has been very strong on this, that we cannot just simply leave it at a programmatic level. One needs to be able to also look at the women's issues at also strategic level, at policy level, and as well as a legislative level. So that focus, that area is an area that is going to receive quite a significant attention. On Program 3, which is the National Language Service, there the purpose is to develop and promote arts and culture in South Africa and enhance the linguistic diversity of the country. And there lies the challenge on the enhancement of the linguistic diversity of the country. The priorities there is to provide translation, editing, and establishment of language units within government departments. We are spearheading that. But one of the challenges that we have there, of course, is capacity and resources. And let me also switch off my. I'm mentioning the issue of resources because for us to do the work that we need to do in the area of multilingualism, there is a need for greater resources. Regrettably, yesterday we attended a special meeting of the Forum of South African Directors General and national and in the province. And Treasury gave us
the realistic numbers in terms of what the government can afford and cannot afford. And we were given specific directives to go back and look at our bids that were submitted and revise them again. It's quite possible that in this financial year, we won't be getting anything extra from Treasury. It is quite possible that whatever little that is on the table will be directed towards education. Coming back to National Language Services, we are working to facilitate the development of provincial language policies, and there are now three provinces that have got approved language policies. Western Cape is one, KZN, and Eastern Cape. But other provinces have not developed or adopted language policies. What is actually key in terms of the MTEF in the work that we are doing with the languages is the establishment of the National Center for Human Language Technologies, which is really taking information technology and infusing it into the official languages as a way and means of, one, adding economic value unlocking the economic potential within the languages themselves, and two, is upgrading the usage and facilities as they pertain to the development of African languages. For example, one of the things that we are talking about here is languages and banking, languages, spell check in computers. Now you can do a spell check in Sikhosa English, and whereas we could not do a spell check in the computers when it comes to African languages. What is so interesting about this work is that it can help us impact on the usage of languages even within the SADC region, because the languages that we use are languages that are also available in the region. One of the thing that is quite interesting about this is the issue of trademarks and intellectual property that emanate from this kind of work that we are doing at the present moment. There is a view, just before we move to program four, that the reason why a number of students do not want to study African languages is because a degree in African languages has got little economic value. And that it's better that you come out with a degree in other disciplines except African languages, because the economic currency of that certificate is not really that valuable. So one of the challenges that we have to change around within the medium-term strategic framework is to see how we can add value to the study of African languages so that in so doing, we are able to infuse economic value in those certificates. In program four,
cultural development, international cooperation, and investing in culture. The purpose here is to improve economic and other development opportunities for South African arts and culture through mutually beneficial partnerships, thereby ensuring the sustainability of the sector. This issue of the sustainability of the sector is a very important one, because most people would say when the children want to study the arts and culture, they would say, but this thing is not sustainable. You won't be able to find a job. You won't be, you know, all of those kind of things. And on a lighter note, and I hope I won't be offending anyone, Honorable Chairperson, somebody who was very close to me asked me why I wanted to study a degree in theater and not consider theology. And I said, but why? I mean, he said, look, he said, if you have got a degree in theology, first, you are guaranteed an audience every Sunday. You've got a pulpit, which is your stage. But what is quite important is that you have got a guaranteed income. Actors don't have guaranteed income. And but later on, after many, many years, and we were working on the establishment of the Department of Arts and Culture in the post-94, and I went back to that same person, and I said, now can you see what a degree in dramatic arts does? And we agreed. But I'm raising this matter because, again, people have got a view that this sector has got little commercial value. And we want to say, no, this sector has got a huge, huge commercial value. There is not one day in our lives as South Africans that we do not see an American product on our television. Not one single day. Whether you're looking at Channel 1, 2, 3, Mnet, whether you've got DSTV, but you're bombarded by that content. It's a huge industry. If you look at cities like London, and you look at the role of theater in the way that people, the city of London promotes its activities, the same in New York, Broadway. And we believe that even here in our case, we have got to transform the creative industry sector and unleash the potential of this sector. In some cases, they say, well, there's a study that has just been released by United Nations on creative industry. And in this study, they say that sub-Saharan Africa contributes 0.02% to the multi-billion industry, which is creative industry worldwide. Now, I think if one does further breakdown of that 0.02, maybe one might find that 0.01
is coming from this country. And it therefore means to us that we have not really looked at creative industries and invested in creative industries in the manner that needs to happen. And that in the medium term, we need to begin to look at areas of investment in creative industry sector. And of course, for us to really tap into that potential, skills development and training in this area becomes very, very important. We are making some inroads, but the inroads are not significant in terms of the volume of the work that has, you know, that has to be done. For example, we have produced films that have received Academy Awards and all of that, which means that there is a talent, that there are South African stories, there is an appetite for South African stories, but it's too early for us to say we are a film producing country. But there is nothing that says that we should not aim towards being a film producing country. At the present moment, most of the work that is happening, the income that is happening within this sector, comes from people who are coming from outside, who come and shoot films here in South Africa. But that, although it is welcome, it is also not sustainable in terms of delivering and film industry. Moving into the next page, Chairperson, that really looks into our bilateral relations and cultural agreements we have with countries all over the world. And there are some cultural agreements that are really beneficial to us, and the ones like we have with Scandinavian countries, the Netherlands, and so forth with the developed world, and they have contributed a lot in the area of training, in the area of resourcing, in the area of giving opportunities to our artists to be able to perform abroad. And there are also co-production treaties that we have with countries such as Canada, France, UK, and these co-production treaties are co-production treaties in the sector of the film industry. We also have got cultural agreements with a number of African countries. In some cases, even where there is no cultural agreement, we do have activities with a number of African countries, guided by the protocols of the African Union and the protocols of SADC. Where, Chairperson, we might want to get some assistance from you is that as a region, as SADC, we hardly meet to talk the issues of arts and culture. And I can't recall the last meeting of high-level, a get-together of legislators, of HODs, bureaucrats like myself, and political principals within the subject region, where we can be able to say, what are we going to do within the area of arts and culture within the region? Other sectors meet, and plan economy, they plan tourism, they plan, but we do not plan art and culture. So that, for example, we can say, can we have exchange of television programs? Can we have exchange of curators? Can we have exchange programs in a number of things, so that we can also impact broadly. And I would wish that Chairperson, that perhaps we can pursue this one so that there could be a third voice in the area of arts and culture that we can talk to. It will help us enhance our activities in other international forums such as UNESCO, in other international forums like the Commonwealth Foundation and so forth. But it's just a way of us really talking to the issues of cultural diplomacy. I have asked my colleagues in international relations to come up with a policy framework which we can discuss on the role of cultural diplomacy in South Africa. And we really underestimate this area. But it is absolutely critical that we do talk cultural diplomacy. Because when you look at other countries, I mean, the British Council is here pushing cultural diplomacy on behalf of the British. The French Institute, the German is the Goethe Institute, and so forth. We need to be able to say to ourselves, what do we do with cultural diplomacy? Not only in the region, but on the continent as a whole. For example, I was just thinking, what would we say if South Africa's position in the post-conflict area on the continent? What is the role of arts and culture in the Great Lakes region in terms of contributing to peace and stability? And these are the questions that we need to ask. Because at times, one of the challenges that we have, Chairperson, across the board, is the lack of intellectual depth in the area of arts and culture in the country. We do not have institutes that research specifically on the issues of arts and culture. There is a shortage of literary journals. There is just a shortage of published research and scholarship. And then what happens is that outside scholars publish books on South African arts and culture. And we become very envious, if not jealous, and say to people, but what right do you have to write? You know, what gives you the right to write about us? But we do not write about ourselves. We do not research about ourselves. And nature does not allow for a vacuum. Where there is a vacuum, something is going to come in and fill that space. And so the politics of self-definition, the politics of self-identity, the politics of self-expression are not really being articulated. And it is a challenge that we intend to address. We are currently talking to the Human Sciences Research Council just to ensure that we can create a capacity within that institution to begin to at least address the issues of research. And for scholarship, it's going to be a long haul, but we are prepared to get into that as well. The second last program, Chairperson, and then I conclude, is heritage promotion, which aims to develop and monitor the implementation of heritage policies, heritage legislation, and strategic direction for identifying, conserving, and promoting cultural heritage for socioeconomic development and
social cohesion. Heritage is very critical in the issues of national identity and patriotism and so forth. And one of the most pressing questions that we have is whether, as South Africans, we have got the capacity and ability to use our heritage and to build social cohesion and national identity. Because although we talk of different heritages in South Africa, our history, our social history, political history, economic history, and everything has crossed each other's paths. So there is no way that one can only talk and say, I've got my English heritage, it's only English, and it has not been crossed, or it has not crossed paths with other histories and other heritages that are in the country. So there needs to be, in a way, a sense where each and every one of us can firmly stand up and say, I'm a protector of all South African heritage or heritage. Because if we're going to limit our approach towards the protection of our heritage, the likelihood is that we would be entrenching differences rather than encouraging interaction. Chairperson, the biggest challenge, and honorable members, the biggest challenge here are just two. No, actually three. One, we have got to look at the role of heritage in tourism development in our country. You can't separate heritage from tourism. And I don't think that we have managed to actually bridge that too, so that we can enhance the tourism product that is on the that we are offering to the world. But for us to be able to do that, we also need to do a lot of work in the conservation of our heritage. The second matter that is going to receive focus for the medium-term strategic framework is to look at. We have actually just completed a skills audit in the heritage sector. And the picture is not what's coming out. It's not really good. And I suppose we shouldn't be surprised because in all the other sectors in our country, the issue of training, skills development is very, 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 glaring, and even in this case, it is like that. But I suppose the difference here is that the skills that are there are aging, and they are not being replaced. So and that is the biggest challenge. Thirdly and lastly, on the issues of heritage in terms of our strategic framework, we are developing a strategy to digitize the heritage connections in our institutions. And the reason being that, one, we want to protect our heritage from theft, but we also want to keep proper records of our heritage. Secondly, we believe that if we are able to digitize our collections, then we are able to reach much wider to the South African population. For example, 200 meters from here, we've got the Lydenburg Hills at the South African Museum. And the kids who grew up from Lydenburg, or were born in Lydenburg, have never seen those Lydenburg Hills. And they do not have an understanding of what that means in terms of their history and their identity and their contribution to human civilization. But if you are able to digitize, you are able to take that matter, you are able to put it on the IT system on computers, and the teacher who's teaching in Lydenburg is able to say to the children of Lydenburg, this is it. Equally important, you can digitize the Mapungubwe collection and you make it accessible to everybody throughout the country. The challenge that we have is that in the educational system, there are very few teaching materials and teaching aids in the area of art, culture, and heritage. And we need to assist in that regard. But I want to close this one, Chairperson and Honorable Members, by telling you that there is a trend that is happening in the country, where international institutions go into our own institutions and ask them to digitize those collections. And the great danger there is that if they go ahead and do that, they might as well go ahead and register trademark on the digitized product. And by the time you want it, or we want it as South Africans, we will have to pay for it. In 2005, when we were hosting the World Heritage Committee, we wanted to get the images of the African World Heritage Site. And there were two countries that had trademarked African World Heritage Site, and it was Japan and Germany. And we could not buy those images from the Japanese institutions. They said no. And we had to go and buy them from the Germans at an exorbitant price, of course. And some of these things are quite political, and but they need to be to get a special focus. Hence, we need to develop a very well thought out policy and strategy on these matters. And the reason also I'm saying that is because the involvement or the development of the technology is continuously evolving. So technology is always 2 or 5 steps ahead of us. And at times when we look at our legislation, it is 5 years, 6 years behind those developments. And we need to find ways and means of keeping up with heritage protection as well as with the technology, the technological development. We are also working on providing social history of the host cities for 2010. And this, of course, speaks for itself. But the project that is going to come out of that will be quite interesting. Looking, for example, at the social history of Cape Town and the social history of Johannesburg, and see what will come out of that. It will be quite interesting. Lastly, Chairperson and Honourable Members, we are also involved and leading on the African continent in terms of the preservation of World Heritage Sites. We have got a fund that is sitting at the Development Bank of Southern Africa. It's managed by the DBSA. It's being audited by the Auditor General. And we are sitting close to 100 million rand. And we are using this money to help in the training of conservators and in the in some cases we assist in the conservation of the African World Heritage Sites, and this fund was established with the leadership of South Africa, and the original endowment fund of 20 million rand came from South Africa, but now we have got a number of sponsors from the Netherlands, China, Spain, and so forth. But what is quite encouraging about this fund is that there are a number of African countries that have contributed to make this fund a reality. Egypt has contributed $1 million. Dollars and so forth. Botswana contributed, Senegal and so forth, and it is very, very encouraging, because the challenge that was given to us by the international community, they said, let Africans put their money where their mouth is, preserve your own heritage and your own identity, then we will assist you in your efforts. And the African continent has responded in a very beautiful way, and maybe one time we can facilitate for the briefing to the Portfolio Committee on the work of the African World Heritage Fund, and so that we just have a sense of the work that we are doing on the continent. Lastly, Chairperson, Eastern Archives, Libraries, and Heraldic Services. Really, the key thing there, it's an ongoing work in terms of promotion of national identity and national symbols. And what we are busy with in the MTEF is the building of of community libraries. And that's within that MTEF. Yesterday, the minister was at Mdantsane, and there was a short turning ceremony for the library in Mdantsane. So that is moving along. And we believe that we must zero in on this one, because it is absolutely critical for us as a country and as a nation that we invest in the brains of future South Africans. Because if we do not do that, we will end up with a nation that is not able to think critically, to think strategically, and to think creatively. Secondly, if we do not invest in that mind, we will continuously be challenged with the ugliness of poverty. And we know that, that in order to break the cycle of poverty, you have got to invest in education. And there is no other way. So as long as we are not investing properly in the mind and in the education, we will always be faced with the challenge of just alleviating poverty and not eliminating poverty. And if we're thinking what kind of South Africa would we like to see, say, in 2025? What should the levels of literacy be? What should the pass rates be? And so forth. And what should be the social bill be or looking like? And we hope that the investments that we are making, that $3 billion investment that we are making on the library, would help us answer those questions down the line. Chairperson, let's just have a quick look at the numbers. And there they are. It's 2.1 for the for 2008-2009, 2.4 billion for 2009-2010, and 2.2 for 2010-2011. And the breakdown is there. In terms of administration, we spent 119.7, arts and culture and society 333.8, national language services 102, cultural development and international cooperation 215.2, heritage promotion that's 885.8, and that reflects the museum, the libraries that we're building, the archives and so forth. And then the National Archives, Libraries and Heraldic Services, that is 4460. I'm going to skip the slides on the MTF expenditure trend because looking at the MTF expenditure trends that were given to us by Treasury yesterday, and we will need then to revise that. But going forward, Chairperson, this recession and the international climate, the international economic climate, is quite is impacting negatively to all of us. And what that means is that we've got to be very focused in terms of service delivery. We can't allow for duplication. We can't allow for wastage. But we have got to be able to use the resources that we have in a manner that will create a bigger impact. We have got to be smarter in how we use our resources, because there aren't any more available on the table. So, as I said yesterday, we were all urged to tighten our belts, to be more efficient, and in the uses of the resources, and to ensure performance. And starting, Chairperson, with the next cycle of Auditor General annual report, the issue of performance evaluation is going to take center stage. And so we are also structuring, gearing our own organization towards more accuracy in performance management during this current MTEF. That is all from my side, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your presentation, HOD. Are there any additions
that your lieutenant from the department would like to make without suggesting that you made a poor presentation. Two heads are better than one. In my mother tongue, one finger can use one finger to itself. So any other thing you think could have been included, feel free to do so without fearing to lose your job. If not at this stage, somewhere along the way, if members raise questions and that kind of thing, feel free to contribute. Otherwise, it makes no sense for the whole crowd of you to be here. Honorable members, you had the presentation. It's not only for questions, it's for comments, it's for inputs, it's questions for clarity. In whatever way you think you can enrich the presentation by way of your input, feel free to do so. And as you raise something, just mention your name again for our good record. Honorable, what's the name again?
Pumelele.
Yes. Thank you, Honorable Pumelele.
Yes. Thank you, sir. Mine, first of all, is to really indicate my appreciation for the presentation that is rather clear. It was very, very slowly in following what reflects on the document. Therefore, it would take a little bit of a time for me to go through it and probably, you know, pick up some areas where I can probably contribute positively. I hope that will be accepted if I probably forward any of the contributions that could probably help in building up and strengthening the program probably tomorrow or so. But the issue that was emphasized by the DG, especially, you know, lacking on playing the major role expected by the community of students. I saw it very, very, very important. It really arose, you know, from my mind that previously, before I joined the parliament, I have been one of those who have been participating in the civil society in Nepal, where we happened to share some information, especially with the civil society across the country. And the issue that he raised, Mr. Chair, is touching my heart because it has been quite very, very serious, you know, with the civil society across the continent. And I would wish that, you know, the members of the committee would take it into a serious consideration that we help in taking that forward and make sure that something is happening in the region. The next one would be the conference that he actually attended to us for October. Good enough, yes. I would actually urge the planners and, you know, the designers of the Yoga program, members as well, honorable members, if possible, to ensure that at least the platform also is provided for some of the civil society, cultural groups, and those groups that are directly involved, not recognized as yet, working on the ground. that deal with the, you know, some beating and other, you know, things that are more like products on the ground, especially in Payton and, of course, nationally, that they are given that opportunity to sort of like demonstrate what they are presently doing, even if they are offered a space outside the conference. I think that would actually really help in a way, and so that everyone could see, you know, what is happening, you know, within the community. I also wanted just to double check whether I've got it right, you know, when BG is talking of the arts and culture and society, whether you interpret society as the community or other way around. I do not know, because I was just looking at arts and culture and community development initiatives, whether that would actually, yeah, talk to that also. And I'm not disputing the term. I'm just needing a clarity. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. You said the SADC connection idea touches your heart. It doesn't touch your brain, it touches your heart. There's a qualitative difference there. I think it's very important. Thank you. Honorable.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Chairperson. I would also appreciate the presentation. You must develop and promote culture, African culture in the country, and that it's a serious responsibility. To do this, your organizational development should be functioning efficiently. I just wanted to check with you how many vacancies in this regard you have in your department. We're talking about supporting community art centers. That's where Wanda lies at some stage. I just wanted to check with you, when are you taking over this programming responsibility so that they can function better? Yesterday, I was sitting in the Portfolio Committee of Higher Education, where the presenters made it, where Department of Public Works and Transport produced 141 graduates from 2006. 200 up to date, 141 graduates. Now you are talking about investing in education. How are you helping the community to invest in education through programs like the one I've mentioned, offering bursaries to the community? I'm very much impressed that you are going to digitize heritage, keep proper records of the department. Thank you.
Uh, Thank you very much, Honorable Member. We're going to take five and then ask the HOD and these people to respond. Another input or question? Honorable.
Thank you, Chair. Also, my thanks to Mr. Wakashi for his presentation. I also have a question.
Is that Honorable Lottery?
Yes, it is. Sorry.
Thank you.
My apologies. I would also want to ask a question on the community arts centres. First of all, perhaps just for my own edification, a bit more clarity on exactly what is done at these arts centres. Do they cater for the different sectors, performing arts, creative arts, visual arts within the creative sector? Is training done, things like that? And then secondly, also, I am glad to hear that you are taking over, but could you perhaps elaborate on the extent of how you will be involved? Will it involve staffing, things like that? Just a bit more information on that. Sorry, and then on Program 3, a comment made by the DG, and I absolutely support, well, not support, perhaps not the right word, but I also share this concern of our students not enrolling for courses, degrees in African languages at university. I think it's one of the major problems in our country in terms of really getting to the mission and vision of this department as well. You know, we can talk about heritage, we can talk about social cohesion, et cetera, but if we don't promote and support our languages, we're in trouble. So I also share with you the fact that one of the problems is that the economic value for these students. How are you going to promote that? Because to my own mind, this is closely linked to promoting multilingualism and actually creating structures where multilingualism is practiced. In other words, your language practitioners. This goes hand in hand again with language policies, language acts, etc. So they're all intertwined, and I can't really see how we can promote and encourage students to study African languages if we don't create the opportunities for them to actually practice those skills. Thank you.
Thank you. That is the third. Another input or question? If not for now, we'll deal with the three. I believe HOD and DG are equal in status. I can use them interchangeably. Okay. HOD.
Thank you very much, Chair Preston. I want to take this opportunity to also thank the honourable members for their input. With regard to the issue of art and culture in society, yes, we are talking about community development, and that's at the core of it. And one of the things I'm happy about in the is the fact that we have moved away from housing to human settlement. And that's much broader, and that also entails community development, and that's how we see ourselves as fitting in. My colleagues from HR are here, and then they will answer the issue of the vacancy rate. But perhaps what I need to just say before they answer this is that. I had alluded earlier on that we had just finished the organizational development exercise, which gives us a clear picture of what we need in terms of capacity. And so one will see that within a period of about 3 months from now, because we need to sign off and then take that organizational development to the Department of Public Service and Administration so that they can also co-sign, you will see a very active advertisement of posts but be that as it may, I think you also need to get that weather rate stands right now. And I was just saying that moving forward, we have a plan to deal with that vacancy rate. Then there was a question of investing in education and better perpetual women. Can you handle that?
Honorable Chair, I think I'll just be responding to all the questions that relate to language. And I noted that the first one, even before the Honorable Professor was read, there was the other one from Honorable Kumalane, which was about investing in education. That's where I'm going to start. It might have not been specifically mentioned, but it is in black and white in the strat plan that the department has got a bursary scheme, which has not just started. It has been rolled out quite a number of years previously. But talking about what is currently going on in as far as that is concerned, is that we have offered bursaries to postgraduate students at the University of the Free State. I think the Honorable Professor Laureate is aware of that, as well as Rhodes University. And even before I talk about the number of students who are beneficiaries of that bursary, I just want to mention that the kind of program that is offered, you know, in those universities is very interesting, because it is very diverse in nature. In that, one would probably think that if we're talking about the Free State, then those students are just only dealing with the food. Or if it's about the roads, and then they are dealing with the pastor. I just want to say that that is not the case. The programs are very diverse. Even people from Toronto can enroll in that program at Rhodes, for example. And there are special critical...
When you say Toronto, you look at me.
Maybe by default. there are quite a number of interesting core areas for specialization. For instance, the translation, which we consider as a very scarce skill, translation and editing. The lexicography, human language technology, language planning, all those are catered in those types of programs that are there in those universities. But coming to the beneficiaries, right now we are talking of something around 200 postgraduate students who are benefiting from that bursary. I'm taking that particular question from the Honorable Member Kumalane along with the same concern, or rather maybe a word of support that was raised by Honorable Professor Laureate.
And these 200 are all at the University of the Free State?
Both. Just cut out, you know. It's just a total number of postgraduate students that are benefiting from this program. And then the question was then that the students, our students, do not enroll for the what you call African language degree courses at universities. They go for some other things, you know, those that are considered to be more fancy than African languages, sciences, and so on and so forth. But the fact of the matter is that the department is not just not doing anything about that. This very bursary scheme is a very critical intervention to address that sort of a thing. Because one thing is that if, like, the students do notice that they these courses are important and they can be given the full bursary, like this one is just a full bursary, residence, meals, everything is being taken care of. But at the same time now, what then comes into question is what happens, you know, once these students have acquired these skills. In terms of the economic value, are there structures that are being created to ensure that the language practitioners, you know, practice their, what you call, skills. I also want then to respond to that, to say that in the department we've got an internship program. And that internship program, which is rolled out almost every year, is not just about, you know, the area of language, but across, you know, the what called the functions of the department. But specifically when it comes to languages, those who are qualified in languages are afforded the opportunity, you know, to practice their skills and gain experience, because also that's a very critical matter, you know, where people would find that they are qualified but they have never practiced it anyway. They may end up being absorbed by the department, but not only by the Department of Arts and Culture. I want to emphasize that when we promote the study of African languages by this type of intervention, we're not doing it just for the Department of Arts and Culture. We're doing it for the country, in that even the universities themselves can still employ, you know, qualified people in languages. Private sector, as we are speaking, there are quite a number of sections in private sector that are interested in employing people who are qualified in languages. We talk about the banks, APSA, and many, many others are very interested in that. So, so far, I would like then to say, yes, indeed, we are doing our best in many ways to ensure that the interest in African languages, in studying African languages, is being revived. Not very long ago, we had a national language forum that was held in Pretoria, where we had all the provinces attending that forum meeting. In such forums, we discuss language issues, language policies, language units, and so on, including creating interest in the African languages, and thereby developing and promoting African languages. But to conclude, I want to go back again to the issue that was raised by the Honorable Kumelele, again, on the issue of the role of SADC when it comes to sort of lagging behind in strengthening the arts and culture in society. In this particular case, I want to say that arts and culture sector includes language. Then what I want to mention is that in March 2008, the department organized a regional conference. I think it was attended by about 10 member states. I think there was only one country that did not attend, that was Zambia. The rest, from what to call, attended. And the resolution taken in that conference, it was called ACALAN. ACALAN stands for African Academy of Languages. African Academy of Languages. And the headquarters of that academy in Bamako, in Mali. And that is mainly supported by UNESCO. So GAC organized that conference. And the resolutions, amongst other things that were taken, there was about the promotion of cross-border language so as to strengthen the what you call the interstate cooperation, you know, by making use of the, what you call the languages. So those cross-border, there were quite a number of them that were identified. I think we know quite many, for instance, when it comes to Sesotho, South Africa, Lesotho, Setswana, South Africa, Botswana, Xitsonga, South Africa, Mozambique, you mentioned them and so on and so forth. And then what happened then, later on, in a synthesis workshop that took place in Addis Ababa, it was agreed that, okay, from each of these five regions of the continent, let's identify maybe two or three languages that need to be promoted. Not to say that others are not going to be promoted, but to start the exercise. And that is going to be funded by UNESCO. I'm glad then to say that two were identified from the southern African region, which was a result of that conference, which was organized by the Department of Agriculture. And those languages are Setswana and Chinyanja. Others call it Chichewa. Those are spoken mainly in Zambia, Malawi, and so on. But those two have been identified, and with the support of UNESCO, arrangements are underway to begin to promote them. So that addresses also that issue then of the role of SADC in ensuring that the issues of arts and culture sector are strengthened. Thank you, Honorable.
May you repeat the two languages?
Setswana and Chinyanja. Chinyanja can say Chinyanja stroke Chichewa. Because it's just a difference of the naming, the otherwise the language is one and the same thing. Others in the other side, which is Gambia, they call it the other. Chinyanja, Chinyanja, C-H-I-N-Y-A. And Chichewa, C-H-I-C-H-E-W-A. Thank you, Honorable.
Thank you. More responses from the department?
Yes, quickly, Chairperson. There was a question on the programming in the programming function in the community arts centers. When do we start? We have already started. There are some community arts centers we are involved in. It's going to be a lot of strategy. And so, but yes, we are involved. In some of these. And the question of the service has been answered. What is exactly done in community arts centers? Well, it's different spectrum of activities. It involves music, dance, and it's mainly theater, dance, and music. Mainly those three, but then when you go out in some areas, then you would find, for example, some centers that just really concentrate in Portland, and you find those cases in KZN, and in the Limpopo, you would find in the where we are working with Noria Mabasa, she's got a scouting a center there, and she's training people. So, but it's very rare to find one that is specialized, for example, the work that is being done with Noria Mabasa, or the work that is being done in Rock Street, etc. But generally, it's mainly music. Yes, and done. Will we also take some administration? Ultimately, we'll have to. And because without that arm, then if the community assets are not properly run, there's no point in us
trying to think that the programming will serve all the progress, all the challenges. What is quite interesting now, for the first time, Siligwa in Benoni, they've come to the department, Philip Cloth and Small Ndaba. They've been one of the most successful community art centers in the country. And now they came to us and they said, hey, we are getting old. What's the succession plan? Can you help us with some money so that we can effect a succession plan for this institution? I was very pleasantly surprised, because you do not get that. When administrators from an institution said, help us effect a succession plan. And we have undertaken that we'll support that succession plan for them. But when they're finished with with the succession plan for their institution, we want them to actually help us effect a succession plan for other community assets that will do an assessment for us in that regard. And yes, I think that's it.
Oh, the matter of
story, Chairperson, the matter of vacancy rate is that the colleague is able to answer.
Thank you. Thank you, DG, for the opportunity. Yes, the vacancy rate in the department is very high. I'm not going to lie about that. Currently, it's around about 38% of the current approved establishment in the department. There are various reasons for that. I think one of the main reasons is that we didn't have a recruitment and selection policy up to now. Fortunately, it has recently, very recently been signed, and it will be implemented in the department. One of the things that we have addressed in the policy is this issue of the DPSA, where you basically have to advertise a position within 6 months from it becoming vacant, and then fill the position within 12 months. Now, that is a governmental instruction all over government. But what we have done is we have in the policy built in a mechanism where responsible people have to report exactly why there is a delay in the filling of the post. So that it's not a question that, for instance, HR can blame line management, or line management can blame HR. We will monitor the process now very closely and look exactly what is going on. Another reason for the high vacancy rate is, of course, the difficulty to recruit people and also to retain people. Especially in languages, there are areas that it's very difficult to retain our people because of salaries outside the department that are sometimes much higher offered to our people. We train archivists, and then the provosts come and they grab those people, and we just leave them. So we keep on training people and we keep on using people in that regard. So I think it's also important that the department should look at the strategy for retention very soon. The other factors for the high vacancy rate is also, like I said, the higher salary was offered outside. We're currently busy with a coordination process regarding languages and also archives where we look across government. One of the reasons why we struggle with coordination is basically because every department up to a certain level has its own jurisdiction on policies. It can make its own policies. there's the job evaluation system that sometimes is used in some departments. Although the job analysts in the different government departments and provincial government departments are trained by the DPS, the human factor is there, and you will see that there is pressure sometimes to elevate a specific position to a certain level. And, people just go for the higher salary sometimes, you know, and it is actually difficult to retain them. You may make a counter offer, and they may stay for another 6 months maybe, but it's only a temporary remedy. Then also the question of the internship that Dr. Tukwene mentioned. We are currently also planning to recruit more interns, not only for our department, but also for the associated institutions associated to the National Department of Arts and Culture. We have 2 years ago started with a program that ended in 2008. Yeah, so about 2 years ago, started in 2007, ended in 2008. And we went to the institutions, we assessed what their needs were. Basically, the department was paying for the salaries of those interns, although they were placed at the institutions, and the institutions had to take care of their the programs that they had to go through. So there was ample opportunity for people to get trained in other things outside the specific area of our department. I can also mention that we also picked up that there were really shortages in some areas when we did the selection. You will find that, for instance, a conservator at the Heritage Museum, like in Bloemfontein, you had maybe two applications for the area. And now, of course, those people don't have any work experience, so you put that aside. But you give them the opportunity and see how it goes. In some cases, people didn't even finish the year. They got employment elsewhere. So it was actually very successful. We are currently embarking on that process again. We have already visited the institution, and advertisements will go out, let me say, within the next 6 weeks, where we will place another 100 interns. Again, a few in the department, and also then the rest in the institution. No, I don't know if there's anything else in terms of the vacancy rate. That's a specific question. Unfortunately, I don't have specific details regarding post-loss. It would be in front of me to tell you, well, currently in Heritage, there's so many vacancies, but the information is available in the department, actually. Anybody be interested in more detailed exposition of that, you can make that available.
Thank you very much. Any more input from the department? Please do.
Thank you, Chair. Madam, thanks for the clarity you have given us.
These are new questions, or you're following up on the old question?
The follow-up.
Okay, thank you.
You are saying 6 weeks. will be advertising this 38% credit you started talking about.
Sorry, sir, not the 38%, the intense, the 100 intense position. That is probably in the next 6 weeks.
When are you filling up this vacancy?
Well, we are currently busy with attending to those vacancies. Of course, it has to be part of our HR plan, which will also be affected by the OD exercise that's now nearing completion. That will probably have an effect on the number of vacancies we have. It might be that there may be more on a higher level, less vacancies, but maybe more on a higher level or more in a certain area. It would depend on the outcome of the recommendations of the early exercise. As we speak, we almost weekly exercise vacancies, and it is a very long and thorough process that we have to go through as a government department. We do get people from outside to assist on a temporary basis and so on, and we are also beefing up the recruitment and selection section to assist with the
Did I get to you correctly? Are you saying you are in the process of processing your organogram, and this will include discussions with DPSA, and only when that process has been concluded will you go out full steam to advertise as per approved organogram? Yes. Thank you.
Chair, can I just say, I think we need to differentiate between the vacancies that are reflected in the organogram, that is the new structure, and the current vacancy rates in the department. It's a cabinet decision that vacancies in all departments have to be filled within 6 months. And the current situation within the department is that we are presently filling in the vacancies as they exist, that's one. Secondly, there are vacancies that are related to positions that are higher. Now let me give you an example here about people who are at the top level of the department, the DDGs.
The DDGs.
Yes. Well, at least we do have a permanent DDG now. And appointed, it's not acting, let me put it that way. But you have acting DDGs in the department. Now, each particular position has got certain positions below that, which means that if you don't fill a DDG post, the other people whose vacancies are related to that particular position will also be vacant. Now, that's the challenge that needs to be addressed. So I just wanted to address the beginning of it from that angle, to say it should not be linked with the OD structure, because the OD structure creates a new position altogether. But the existing vacancies are being filled, but there are also these specific positions that will not be filled until such time that you give attention to those top-level structures of the department. Thank you.
Okay. We'll move towards concluding this discussion so that we open up for further questions.
Thank you, Chairperson. I also said that the way you are summarizing it is correct. So I think perhaps what we need to do is to be able, because we are finalizing, as far as I'm concerned, I've finalized on the OD exercise. So as the political principals have made their input, we will be going to the DBSA. That takes about 2 to 3 months for them to sign off on things. Then one would then begin to see an increased level of advertisements of the posts. And yes, it is correct that we are advertising some posts right now, but the volume is not as it would be after the approval of the OD exercise. And perhaps what we can do is to make an undertaking that as soon as that OD exercise is approved, that we can then give a table of report in terms of how we're handling the advertisements of the post.
Thank you very much. There was a question. Will there be a role, either inside or outside or both, for ordinary community members at the Durban Conference come 29th and 30th October this year? There was another question. In your usage of society and community, are these concepts interchangeable, or actually how do you use them? This was not a question, it was an input. They need to promote multilingualism both in theory and in practice. And if actions speak louder than words, theories would remain empty propositions until they are translated into practice. I want to believe that beginning with us ourselves and those of us who play leading roles in whatever institutions we find ourselves, I think that concern is very important, because often our children, more than from our theory, they learn from our practice. And I'm not saying those under us are our children. But often, when you practice what you preach, you sort of give marching orders to those who actually follow you. And the same would apply to how do we culturally, in our art and culture, connect to the bigger program of SADC and of the African Union and the rest of the world. Unless charity begins at home, you can hardly be seriously listened to and beheld internationally and in the region. So that means these big things we think to contribute to SADC, if we're really strong inside the country in terms of social cohesion and nation building, we can speak with authority when we interact with other people. But if we are splintered and misfocused, when you make an input, people question your own home base. If what you're saying here is good at Bamako, why don't you practice it in South Africa? So these are very interesting things. And the question that was raised, actually, do we have two people here, one called Lotrit and another one Loria, or is the same person being pronounced differently? And the real one is Lotrit, eh? Okay. Thank you. Let us all sing the same name song. Lotrit, 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 Lotrit. because I think the question you raised there as to what sectors do these centers provide for. It's critical that at these centers we begin to walk our talk in terms of making them open to all sectors of our community so that they can feel that they belong there too, they can do their things there too. It's a question of how we work out these things on the ground and promote that social cohesion and do the national building at grassroots level. Could someone attend to those questions I thought were not responded to?
The question of the content, my colleague will talk to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. We are actually working on the question of invitation, and our view is that the conference is going to be as inclusive as possible. Mind you, the conference will be on the 29th and the 30th, and it will be followed by a social mobilization conference or workshop on the 31st, where communities are going to be involved. So we are not going to leave out communities which are also involved in art centers or in any art form that they can come to the conference. Thank you very much.
Perhaps, Chairperson, we can prepare a presentation for the portfolio committee on the preparation of what is being done for the election, so that the portfolio committee itself can then begin to apply its mind on how it would also input into the conference, because it's not just going to be a question of invitation. It's also where, with the invitation, we are requesting input, but for you to be able to make informed input as well, and to also assist in the thinking, if we can then do the presentation on that. And once I still have the floor, when we're talking about society, that matter of society and community, we look at communities as components of society.
I agree with that sociological interpretation.
Thank you.
Thank you. Maybe our take on the Durban conference would be in a greater context, that whatever things of interest in the areas of delivery, if we get information, we ourselves will from time to time check what we want to participate in and that kind of thing, because it assists us to monitor and do oversight on what you're doing without collapsing our role into the role of the department to do what they need to do. Because that separation remains critical. Cannot be referee and player at the same time. Even the referee in boxing, you get between the two of them, but you make sure you don't throw a punch in one direction or another. So we believe we'll be kept informed about a lot of other activities that you do, including that one in Devon, and we'll determine what role we want to play ourselves. So thank you very much. There are people who arrived after we had introduced ourselves. May we ask them to introduce themselves, please? Or am I wrong?
Thank you, sir. I'm Diane Wilson. I'm from the Department of Arts and Culture, currently acting for the Chief Director at HR.
What's the name again?
Ria Ulofse.
Ulofse.
Yeah.
Why don't you say it? Any other person?
Thank you, sir. I'm Kalilat Gondash. I'm the Parliamentary Officer for the Department of Arts and Culture.
I'm a member of the Portfolio Committee.
By the way, Honorable Maluleke had called us to indicate he's caught in traffic, that's caught in bad weather.
It took me 2.5 hours to travel from Laboria Park.
Is it?
Yes.
Okay, we must discuss it using charter helicopters in such situations. Thank you very much. I suspect there's another one who's not introduced himself well.
Eunice Nyalongo. I'm a member of the portfolio committee.
And there's a rumor that you come from Mpumalanga, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. No longer rumor, sir. Honorable members, this is another take on questions we want to put to the department. It's now, according to my watch, it's not an Omega watch, 25 to 12. That leaves us with a maximum of 55 minutes. Honorable Lautrit, popularly known as Lauriette.
I think that's the French pronunciation. Thank you, Chair. I would just like to ask for a bit more information on the issue that the DG raised concerning Program 5 Heritage, and it is the role of heritage in tourism development. Because if I recall correctly, the Minister of Tourism also refers to the importance of culture and heritage in tourism. Are there any activities along those lines over and above, for example, the 2010 book that's to be published? Because I think this is a very important issue to promote our culture in our in tourism.
Thank you. We shall not coerce members to raise questions. Honorable Maluleke.
Man, it's a very short one. Because the DG actually mentioned that he's very happy that we now have a Department for Human Settlement. I just wanted to find out what the relationship is between, because I think it's very important. African culture actually has a very important role to play in that human settlement development.
Thank you. I saw your fingers moving. Result of strong Western Cape wind. Thank you very much. We'll deal with these two. And after the two, I'll also raise my questions, but I want to make sure I don't take the floor from under your feet. Because as members, you need to exhaust your questions. Please assist us with the two.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, this matter of heritage and tourism, or cultural tourism, is there are some interactions, you know, and but we do not yet have a plan that we can put on the table and say to the government, this is what we want to do. And for the first time, we're going to be participating at the tourism in that. And we are talking with our colleagues in tourism, some of the activities and seminars should focus on the question of culture and tourism. It's very, very important. I just have got a sense that we have not leveraged enough on the area of culture and tourism. And that statement is unscientific, but there is just something in me that says, with all the rich culture and that we have as a rainbow nation, I don't think we have tapped enough, and I think we can still do more. And then on the question of human settlement, yes, there is an interaction. We started some 2 years ago. We got a colleague in the department who's driving, Paula Mavidiela,
who is driving this team. Where we start from is we start from the premise or the question that says, in providing housing, are we building community? And because if you approach it that way, then you then move on to say, but what are the ingredients of building a community? And that's the essential. So that's why we say there are certain things that are necessary when we're talking about human settlement. It's we're not talking about just simply provision of houses, but we're talking about building of communities. And the experience that we have seen in other countries where housing has been provided and the element of communities has been not adequately addressed is that those houses, the so-called housing projects, and you probably find them, well, you find them in New York, in Harlem, you find them in the Bronx, you find them in Detroit, and so forth. And because they were not built and never took care of this community element, they end up being drug dens and all of these kind of things. And because there are some things that they are not catering for in the human needs. And so that's why we're saying, but we've got to introduce certain minimums, and that we know that communities that need, as much as the community needs a school, the community also needs a library, they need a centers and so forth, so that we are then able to people to talk about their neighborhoods and their communities. And that is quite important. And if we're not going to let people, because when the mind is bored, it will look at other activities to keep itself busy. And we might not necessarily be happy about those.
Thank you. Honorable members, are there follow-ups or Honorable Malay?
You know, this issue that the DJ just responded to now is so important because it also touches on your fight against crime, you know, reduction of crime. Because this, you know, you will be dealing with the determinants of crime. You know, and I don't think, you know, we really understand, I mean, as a country, the important role of agriculture, besides the social cohesion and other issues that we always talk about. And you would find that you actually can manage a great deal of the budget through subs and put it in agriculture, because agriculture can best deal with some of those determinants of crime.
Other few interrogative inputs. Social cohesion and the national building. Thank you. I'll go and reclaim my English, my school fees for my English teacher. So there's some job that was not complete. Nation build. This an area that's not easily measurable. An area which is not easily time framed. But attempting to do that, I believe, will not be taking us in a wrong direction. Because I think along the way, we have to see where we were in 1994 and where we are today, where we've progressed, where we've been static, and where we actually have gone backwards. Because human society is not always moving forward. There's a possibility of remaining static, and even the danger of reneging on the progress one has made. I think it's critical for us to try to work on mechanisms and criteria that can tell us whether we are making it or we're not making it. In the previous presentation, we debated the issue of exploitation of artists, and there was already indication in that documentation that you developing programs towards addressing that to sort of increase the loaf on the table of our artists. Again, unless we've got mechanisms to say where were we when you made the promise and where are we now after some 6-7 weeks after the promise were made, the promises were made, and where we shall be in the next 5 years, counting it year by year. We may come here and congratulate ourselves and count the number of meetings we've had without actually tangibly showing how far we have gone. I think that's the name of the game. From 2009 to 2014. I think that's the name of the game. Delivery. When we talk about enhancing, promoting, mobilizing the music fraternity in South Africa, there are different musical genres, types, isn't it? From traditional cultural music, classic music, there's also classic music in Africa. Classical music is not only in Europe. Every society has their own classical music. I think if we compartmentalize this into genres, it will be easier to measure to what extent we have helped in this given category and that given category. You don't have to do all in the same year. But it's critical that we are focused and specific, because then we'll know in these areas this is what we've achieved, including in our budgeting processes. We'll make sure that the REM speak the language of our strategically identified areas of delivery. I think that will also assist us a lot. You've mentioned sharing some responsibilities between national, provincial, and local government, and even the possibility of taking over, as long as that is constitutional. Because you can't take over a competency that belongs to another sphere of government unless that is constitutional. Now, it's critical that these identified areas are very clear to all the role players, because then you won't know for certain who's the driver of what and who's accountable to who. And this area, as you have seen now as we talk, there are some municipalities, there are quite a few who are taking other spheres of government to court simply because of a non-mutual understanding of the competencies that are involved. So I think for the sake of the portfolio committee, it's going to be very critical that we don't just have it in general, but we know exactly who's playing which role. There's one thing that we have not done yet, which we shall need to do. What do you call them? These are the organizations that you support, kind of your satellite. What do you call them? What is
the associated institution?
Yes, that kind of thing. Basically, you've outlined the departmental strategic objectives as to where you're going, and I want to believe the committee would also like, sooner rather than later, to interact with those other bodies so that we understand them fully and they can explain them fully, since they are not like a directorate in a department. Many of them are NGOs, or they are funded by us, but they are autonomous in their own right. So that's an area that we really need to understand fully, so that we are able to assist you even more fully. I'm personally very happy and excited about your recognition of the need to train in the area of administration and management. Again, here, I think it's critical if certain institutions or organizations are identified and we can talk mathematical language and say, in this year, we intend to help the following. And these are the inputs we'll make, and these are the expected outcomes. Because then you can measure the inputs against outcomes and or outputs. I think that will assist us a lot. I just want to believe honorable members will find that also very helpful in order to deal specifically with given issues. But this has been an area, especially in the previously disadvantaged communities, which has been an area of huge weakness, almost disastrous. If the department indeed can help in this area, you will have made an invaluable contribution to the empowerment. When we talk about exploitation of our artists, it's partly because of their weakness in this very critical area, even signing documents that they don't understand, even in big print, even worse when it comes to the small print. So you address this area, you become the darling, I believe, of this committee. You talk about emancipation of marginalized women, children, and the work of the disabled. This language is constitutional policy. It's spoken by every department, but departments will be compared and rated in terms of the deliverables and delivery levels in those areas that you have identified. Otherwise, the language is nothing to boast about. Everybody speaks it. The promotion and development of linguistic diversity in South Africa in the area of translation, editing, language professions, provincial language policies, literature, specialized technologies, that kind of situation. You succeed here. You keep our nation united. You keep our nation peaceful. You assist us to do all the other things we want to do. You fail in this area, you give birth to Rwanda, Burundi, and other many places like Northern Ireland, and you name it. If we succeed here, we'll do this country a great good. They sound small, these things. But these things can cause wars and can enhance peace. So we'll keep on as a portfolio committee looking at how far these things go. One good thing we've had, it's not new,
but we've had in a dramatically new fashion, is the way I've listened to different minority groups, because we must talk this thing, about this thing, because people talk about it outside. If we don't talk about it in this portfolio committee, we are actually, it's a dereliction of a critical duty. In our country, we've got majority and minority groups, and I've heard from them of late indicating their happiness and satisfaction with the way the new president has a big ear for the issues of minorities. Even the taxi people say he's got a big ear. So it's going to be very, very critical that this committee is not blind to those issues, including in our discussions amongst ourselves here. There are certain issues I'll never know because I do not stay within that group on a daily basis. And those of us who are situated in those situations must be able to enlighten all of us so that we make appropriate monitoring and oversight over the government or the department. One thing that you have not brought back, and I may be weak in other areas, but in the area of pursuing debt, I'm good. The previous meeting, I raised the issue of traditional leaders who are custodians of our culture and customs. And the minister responded very powerfully to say this issue will be taken on board. And it's now lost, or if it's not lost, it's asleep under other issues. It's critical that we take this into account. Take, for example, the Eastern Cape. It's not the only place. The custom of circumcision with the kind of consequences is a very good custom. He's asking to be excused, and the reason is credible, and we'll excuse him. Thank you very much. I've been to circumcision school myself, and we were more than 300. Not only one died, and many other schools have helped. So that's a cultural custom which is really good. There are lots of things you learn there, and I can quote a few things here, but my suspicion is that some of you have not been there, so there will not be a free ride.
I've been.
So this area, and you know this is entrusted to our traditional leaders, that kind of thing. So please, please take this issue seriously. You've invited us to make input, and we've agreed to make input without taking over the department. So we're just making a suggestion and leaving it to you to write. You've spoken about provincial language policies. Next time, it would be important that we get your, your evaluation of all the provinces, and you rate them, those that have done, those that have not done. In what sense are you saying they don't have policies? And I'm not defending. I'm just saying, for example, I thought Limpopo is up to date because we've determined which are the official languages, and we use them in the legislature. Anybody can stand up and speak any of these languages in the legislature. But according to you, there are certain things we didn't do, even when I was speaker of that legislature. And I'm not defending. And I'd like to know where are our shortcomings so that we can improve. This is critical. We can't have a situation where provinces run in the area of language unconstitutionally unacceptable programs. We must defend the constitutional rights of the communities in those provinces to have clear policies so that the cultural diversity is protected. You've spoken about music.
And we've had in the past a Stanford competition, isn't it? Has it been resurrected? Or it's being resurrected? Interact with education, I think they are resurrecting that. One thing that apartheid did not prevent us from doing, a good thing, was during those days, depending on the composer, any composer could compose any musical piece in any language, and if approved for its quality, it would be sung across the country. That's how in the early 60s, I was able to speak Xhosa. Ndakuliphosa ilisolam, ndakuliphosa elundini, ndibona izinto zikweba. Ndivane sandise ngoma emnandi, ndide ndicinge ngokuthi ziyalibiza. Because we were singing that song. That's how I learned to speak English before I could speak English. Although the pronunciation was very interesting. There was this song, and we used to sing it, Dema the Conqueror, Dema the Conqueror. Later I discovered it's the Mighty Conqueror. Now, if you watch, amongst others, Muvango. These days, when people recognize that I speak Venda, from Limpopo, I speak Venda, I'll be greeted in Venda language, Anda, in KwaZulu-Natal, in the Eastern Cape. And sometimes I think people know the language and they proceed and they discover they are very limited. They are using Muvango terminology in a very exciting way. So it's critical that the department really plays its rightful role. You know the power of the media, whether it's electronic or print or audiovisual, you name it. These things permeate all our communities at all levels. So I think we must grab the bull not by the tail. I know ox tail is good, but by the horn. And make the kind of contribution that we need to make, because our people are really opening us that opening up to those possibilities. For example, my mother, the only English she knows is "Oh my God." It begins there and ends there, but she can follow a drama presentation on TV. And largely she'll tell you at the end of the story what was happening. And largely she'll be correct. Because that's the language of action. Yeah. She will even say, why is this young girl refusing the proposal by this young man? Just judging by the action. Okay. To summarize what I understood from your input, the content was very good. But here and there you were raising questions to us. And we are interested in your strategic plot to answer those questions for the good of the community. Ours is not to answer questions from the staff, but ours is to note that you understand the question, you understand the problem, you understand the issues, and you have collectively found strategic means to find solutions to those problems in the area of delivery. The other thing maybe is in the document that some of us might not have read completely. You see, when you talk the language of delivery, you must quantify the deliverables where it is possible, or quantify relational outputs a friendly, Ubuntu-oriented society. You can't quantify that, but you can say it in a language that is meaningful. But the other very critical issue is time frame. If we're saying over the next 5 years, it means what we promise here must also be time framed. But proper time framing does not become interpretable and understandable in 2014. It means we reduce that to year one, year two, year three, year four, year five. Am I still on the right path, honorable member? Then we'll be able to do our job. But if we wait till 2014 without intermediate time frame, by the time we wake up, half the house might have been burnt down and there'll be nothing to stop the burning down of the other half. So I've missed those time frames in the presentation. As we sit here, and I'm not saying you can be perfect to the last figure, do we know how many trumpeters we have in the country, how they are spread over our country? The artists of different types, we know they are there. But do we have a map? Can we really have a map that can be presented and we see? Look, we're talking about the rural transformation, isn't it? It's part of our program, a very, very important program. We need really to be able to see the spread and how these things are happening in the rest of the country. Is there an over preponderance in Cape Town, in Johannesburg, in Durban? Is Kunu left out? Huh? Is Chris Hani's place? What's the name again? Huh? That place where I went and we lodged the number 1,000 of the water pipes. Now you see, we are at Hani's place. Okay. So this thing spread really. That's the critical issues where the department will be rated. Have we reached the poorest of the poor? Are we reaching everywhere? Are we walking the same walk? Everything goes to Gauteng. I'm not saying Gauteng must not get. It's the economic heartbeat of this country. You like it, you don't like it. And I'm happy we've got an economic heartbeat. Without that, you are in serious trouble. So we need to look at those issues and be able to quantify things. Now, if we say what adds economic value into art and culture, what is the value now as we sit here? Because you see, when you talk about the GDP, gross domestic product, you also look how much mining contributes to that, isn't it? Manufacturing sector, agricultural sector, am I right? Now, if we talk about adding economic value, it's a very good English phrase. But it's very good English phrase. And I'm not saying people should speak bad English. And I'm not saying anybody should commit suicide because they can't speak good English, even if it's not their mother tongue. Now, basically I'm saying, I think it's not impossible to establish what percentage this sector for which you're responsible contribute to our economy. And how we can say after the economic meltdown, in fact, as I said, during the time of economic meltdown, art and culture does very well because it becomes kind of a hospital where people go when they've got emotional stress and that kind of thing. I'm not so sure how pretty it is. But it's critical that we are able to monitor. Now, if one day we will say our artists are being rewarded adequately, we must be able at that time we make this pronouncement to compare it with some 2 years back, some 3 years back. If not individual pay individual, but on average. So in other words, I'm saying, yes, we want to contribute to the economic wealth of this country, but we must speak
tangible figure. Without that, it's a good dream, maybe an excellent dream. But if people confront me as a politician and say, what do you mean? And I'm not even able to say in Limpopo, when we went to Parliament in 2009, there were 400 hectares paid an average of 1,000 per month. In 2 years' time, there are 700 paid an average of 4,500 per month. In the next 2 years, we hope to improve this situation by 10 to 15%. You've spoken about agreement with the Scandinavian countries, the Netherlands. I'm happy to hear that, but I know that is not only with these countries. And as I sit here, I'm called chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Arts and Culture. Honorable members, do you think I've seen those agreements yet? Have you seen them?
No.
We are required not only to monitor what happens in the country, but the interaction between the department and other relevant international bodies. So some of these documents, I've got my PA here, a privilege for you members. We have got secretary for the portfolio committee. You see a comrade, Lusanda. And yes, I'm from the department. Some of these things are necessary to empower honorable members to do their job well. You spoke about Broadway, about Hollywood. Did you speak about Bollywood? By the way, Bollywood is found in India. So we're not even dreaming about Africa-wood, or a better name for that matter.
It's Nollywood in Nigeria.
Huh?
In Nigeria, it's Nollywood.
It's Nollywood. Okay. So we must begin to think of something. You know, names can attract attention, and attention can produce action, and action can produce results. So let us look at those things and excel. If we're looking for excellence, these are some of the areas that we must go in and we'll do more than the average. You mentioned the role of art and culture in post-conflict society. We are 15 years post-conflict in South Africa. And personally, I've seen, but I've not seen enough, of the role of art and culture in promoting things that heal the wounds and create a new environment. I've not seen enough. I think there's a lot. And for Africa, there's much room for that. But I think it's a very good observation. Don't lose it. I think it will take us some more. Poor research and publications in African languages, both in South Africa and Africa. One would like, I've seen in the previous document, you've really worked on this thing. But maybe we need to sharpen it, time frame it, look at possibilities of results in a given period, because this has been said many millions of times. Last year, towards the end of the, as we closed the last session of Parliament last year, we had at the center the ICC, Professor Qua Pro something. He's running an institution here. It's from
Ghana.
Yeah.
It's Professor Qua.
Pro Qua something. He shared with us a huge wealth about this negligence on African issues and cultural issues. I'm happy you've identified that. Identifying is one thing. For me, a doctor, first is good if in his diagnosis, he's able to identify what are my problems. But it's even better when he makes proper prescriptions, and becomes best when the prescriptions work. So this is a diagnosis. This patient will await your treatment and healing. In the area of heritage and tourism, we still have to be very clear as to what our role is and contribution is, and where we converge with the department, right? The other department of tourism. Yeah, it's very clear that we understand we need to complement one another in a way that does not make us rivals. So we need to be clear there, and we are willing to assist. World Heritage Site. I think you're right, we're number one in Africa in terms of preponderance of these areas. How many honorable members have been to these heritage sites? Some of them are in our provinces, even in our own municipalities and districts. I think for honorable members to discuss these matters intelligently, we also will need physical exposure beyond reports and the things we read. If we can't go to all of them, I think along the way we must do division of labor. Huh? And we say, those from Limpopo, visit those in Limpopo, Mpumalanga, do that, and come, let us compare notes, so that when Wakashe presents something there, we can ask intelligent questions. Not only intelligent, but also intelligible questions dealing with those issues. And I've heard of the Heritage Fund. I will need more education here as to how, if you have a fund, the first question you ask yourself is, how does it fund me? I'm not talking about honorable member of parliament. How does it fund the ordinary person on the ground? There are funds which are big in name and big in figures, but when you come to the ground, you need a microscope to find out what they've done for the ordinary person on the ground. There's been a lot of talk about the Lotto Fund. Many bodies saying we are collapsing. There are millions there, but this fund has never come our way. Huh? And I think there had to be some intervention before the fund could become alive again and assist those who need to be funded. Like some budgets in departments which flow over to the next year and back to Treasury when the recipients are hungry on the ground. I'm not referring to this department. If it's this one, we'll talk about it specifically. But I'm not talking about it now. So let's get better education here and translate this to programs on the ground that can indeed assist. National Archives records, libraries and heraldic services here in Parliament. I think we have all these three things in one place. I want to believe in the 6 hectares, including the premises of Parliament. We do have this thing. Have members of staff been there? And we honorable members who are here, have we been there? Because if we can't see very important documents, archives, and things that are here, I visited these programs in this program of the Millennium Millennium? Parliamentary Millennium something. PMP, I think. Parliamentary Millennium something. Progress, yeah. These things are here on the premises, and I think before we protect things far, far away, we need to know what's around us here and acquaint ourselves to that. And Lusanda, assist us. We don't even need to spend. We don't have to fly. We don't need a special lunch. Expose us to this thing with which we sit here. See, libraries, I think we need a map for the whole of South Africa. If you just cast your net, your mind net, into some of the areas from which you come, you might not even be able to establish the existence of a single library, including at your schools, including high schools. Now, if we, at the end of our term, if we tell ignorant people that we've made a difference, and yet we've not made a dent in that area, ignorant people will applaud us and even wonder why we are not the president. But if we tell knowledgeable people, they will say, but you come from this area and there's not a single library. So I think we need to have a map where we can look at the dots and see where are the libraries and where there are no libraries. And if now we are at 5% and we complete our job when we are at 20%, then we've made a difference of 15%. No other language will convince thinking people that change has been made and transformation has been made if we can't talk that language. I'm moving to the conclusion now. Among the things you showed there, you even showed Freedom Park. And I want to guess, maybe wrongly, that not half of us have been to Freedom Park. Maybe 75% of us, maybe 80, 90, 95. I don't want to say 100% have never been there. The chances of being wrong, they are very bright. But they may exist. And it's a very, very important place in this country. All these issues I'm raising with one focus, way forward. How do we change the environment? How do we change the scenario? We're talking about the 2010 project. 2010 is June next year, am I right? We know the portfolio committee on sports and recreation is up to here. They are still up to here. But you've convinced us that we also have a role in that area. And that role cannot begin in 2010. It has to begin now, even maybe including some interaction with our sister committee that's involved in this issue. And I'm just hoping that what honorable members have said and what I'm raising are getting minuted so that we don't come back and reinvent the wheel. Finally, the manifesto issues that our people have adopted. Mention of a number of jobs has been made in the previous document. We need that mention to be more refined as we move forward. Until we talk the language of job number, the word job is as meaningful as it is to an unemployed. Job, if you ask an unemployed person what is a job, they'll tell you what a job is. But that does not mean they're employed. So we also must begin to talk the language of numbers. Here, we'll never be perfect, we are not God, but we must begin to talk the language of numbers, what decent jobs we're creating in whatever we are doing. Otherwise, if it remains salaries for administrators and no job for others, we've not moved. I'm happy you've touched on the issue of education, training, bursaries. We need to be more clear as to exactly what is it that we're talking about. Then we will be talking the language our people spoke in adopting the manifesto on areas of education, including training. If there's more money going to be allocated to the Department of Education, higher and basic education, any area within us, our department which qualifies as education and training, must also within our budget receive what? A slice, an important slice. Because education is education, doesn't matter where you find it. So you spoke about your degree. In this relevant area. And we're proud of that you have a degree in that area. So we want others to have degrees in whatever areas can be useful to us. Previously we discussed that this arts and culture thing can make a huge promotion to health issues, including psychosomatic. Is it true? Who's the medical doctor here? Because I'm informed from a source, I won't say reliable or non-reliable, that about 96% of our physical diseases that become physically visible are originally psychosomatic. And what we see are symptoms of that psychosomatic condition. So arts and cultural things can play an important role here. And if it is better identified, I want to believe there are lots of things you're doing which address this issue, but it's not being translated into the language that it should be translated into. So we might end up saying you're not making a contribution into these identified goals, whereas you are, but what you're not doing is to speak that thing in the language of health delivery. You can't take my medical definitions very seriously. I ran away from the School of Medicine in the first 30 minutes of my class. Also, you touched on the issues of crime. Other members raised that. I know by what we do, we contribute a lot. But we're not working hard to demonstrate that in that area, we are making these contributions. You see, it's terrible to be failed for things you have done, for failing to express them in adequate language. That's why you need moderation sometimes after the examiner is marked. Somebody may come and look and say, but these things are said in the language the first marker did not recognize. Also on the issue of corruption, I think we do things that can address this issue. Rural development, we need to be more pronounced as to how we are handling that. At long last, the area of legislation, we didn't hear much today. Any department, especially the transformed department, in this transformed environment, that does not touch on the legislative terrain will automatically fail itself. I'm not saying if there's nothing, you must create legislative thing for the sake of meeting the demand. We're saying, and I know you've given us a few documents about the cathedral and other things, I want to believe there are areas where we need to amend, where we need to repeal. I want to believe that there are legislative gaps or lacunae that we need to address. We've not heard much about the Millennium Development Goals in your revised presentation. As expected, this time it will be finer than in the previous document. Because we can't talk development if we ignore this very critical. Because when South Africa is measured, every department must have contributed towards our rating. We should not be found to be a department that has pulled us back. We must move forward. You've touched on the area of African Renaissance in the previous document, and this is an area we dare not forget. Previously, we talked about the Pan-African Parliament. What is our contribution? There's this program, 90 Plain Street. Have we watched it on TV? 90 Plain Street? Who has watched it? Few times. Is there on TV every Tuesday? Just go and choose your, check your programs. It's very interesting, talking about parliament here, things like that, that kind of thing. 90 Plain Street. I've already talked about the media. Finally, there's this thing called, this concept of cultural village. You go to these villages in Zambia, in Swaziland, in a few places here in South Africa, I'm just mentioning a few, the Tonga traditional village. What other villages do you know in this country? Lesotho, in another country. In South Africa? Why was the name? Natal. Cultural village. Now, any country, any province in Africa that doesn't have that village, because you go there and you take a route, by the end of that round, you are a highly educated person in the culture of that community. It's a short course in the cultural activities of a given community. So could we hear a little more about this? And what's fortunate about it, many areas people are doing it. Some individuals are even trying by themselves to do something along this route. If you go to the Kruger Park through Palaburwa, is there no cultural village on your right, next to a small mountain? You can just sample a few and make a few responses. Just sample.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Indeed, that was quite a comprehensive response. I will just sample. And first, let me just thank you for your input. You started by asking whether are we making it or are we not making it. And with regard to the issue of the musicians, had a number of meetings with the Creative Workers Union of South Africa, and they developed a strategy that we are going to be funding.
including the issue of the legal representation and contract of the musicians. They are at the present moment looking at a partnering with the legal resource center at the University of the Witwatersrand, so that it can then the legal resource center can be the one that is providing that service. I am currently working also with Four and Fisher, and which is an intellectual property firm, and also being assisted by Michael Kett. Following up on a prominent South African musician who said that she does not own her, somebody owns her music and her trademark. And it's going to be quite an interesting one, and because I think it's going to be a one that is going to be, it's going to set a precedent.
Let me be fair and give you 5 minutes after half past 12.
And then, well, we are handling with the traditional festival and all of that. Perhaps two things that are quite strategic for us is you mentioned the power of the media, and in particular television. May I request that the portfolio committee, if the portfolio committee could take interest in the appointment of the board of the SABC, because content is very, very important. And when you generally look at the board, you don't find people who are anchored in the issues of arts and culture, and therefore the content that we get at times does not address the images that we would like to see on television. And so that's critical. And the other matter is the percentage of the contribution of art and culture to the GDP. There are some studies that we have done, but they need to be upgraded. And we will come with the map for the libraries. And lastly, Chairperson, we have got the matter, the 11 pieces of legislation that require our amendment and repealing. And they were supposed to have been debated in the last term, but because of the shortness of the period, then they were postponed to this term. So we are ready with that, and it's 11 pieces, but they will go through under one cultural laws amendment bill. But it will be addressing 11 pieces of legislation, so we will be ready with that. Thank you, sir.
Honorable members, any burning question, which if you don't raise today, will create problems for you until we meet again. Please feel free, raise it. That can include differing with the chairperson on some of the things he raised and said. The chairperson is not the committee. He's chairing the committee. Baba. Pumelelo.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chair. Mine is to just double check, you know, when DG was making a presentation, he indicated that if a need arises, there could be an acceptance of presentation, particularly at the conference in Durban, if I heard him correctly. I just needed some clarity whether he was referring to the committee itself, or the individual member, or the minister and the teacher.
Please.
I was referring to the committee.
Honorable member, you've given us a pumelelo because you feared the surname might twist our tongue. May you pronounce the surname for us, please?
The surname is Njipela.
Njipela. Okay.
Lobia Gurina Uma Upuza Ikufi, Salapan, Yawazo Tigini, Leon.
Oh, Dima Tinki Nyande. Dima Tinki Nyande. Yes. Thank you very much. Constitutionally, we are allowed to pronounce each other's name, even if we don't do it perfectly so, as long as we don't interpret it in an insulting way. Will they respond?
Chairperson, the response is that we were just referring it to the committee. What we will do is we will just, when we go back, circulate the documents already on the conference. We will then distribute the document through your good offices to the members of the portfolio committee, and they can then better engage with that. And I think it will assist in terms of providing that thinking and behind the conference.
Thank you. As long as we know that when we are invited, our transport and accommodation and meals are not covered by the department. And at this stage, honorable members, we are aware that there are still very, very limited resources for doing things too far away from Parliament. We hope the situation will change for the better in the course of the year. Just wanted honorable members to know that if and when we're invited, there's that challenge. I failed to attend one meeting where I was invited by the department recently, the MINMEC meeting, where I would have had the advantage of hearing what all other provinces are doing in this area. But because of that aspect, I was not able to honor the invitation. It's a challenge that will be overcome. Thank you. Honorable Lothric. You are being requested for an impromptu closing remarks, and we'll close.
Thank you, Chair, and I would like to use this opportunity to thank members of the department, specifically also the DG, Mr. Rokashe, for your contribution today and for enlightening us in terms of the strategic plans and activities that you foresee. I think also we've had a number of valuable inputs from the honourable members, and I think maybe you will also now know things that, that we feel very strongly about and things that are very close to our hearts, specifically within in the arts and culture environment. So also, Chair, thank you to you for your guidance here and also your remarks. I think you gave very incisive overview of what was said and all the different contributions that were made. And I hope that many or much of what has been said here today, that we will in our next meeting see the proof of this and that we can have recourse back on that. So thank you for all your contributions. And I think it was a meaningful meeting.
Thank you. Any announcement from administration? Whether we're going back to our offices or whether there's a stop somewhere on the way? We're told that all roadsides have been removed
There's only one way that says your office ahead. Thank you, honorable members, and thank you, Professor Lottery.
What a novel, wow, to be a novel.
Wow,